Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents On Love's Gentle Shore by Liz Johnson. Narrated by Amy Melissa Bentley. 1. She'd thought it was safe to come back to the island. She'd thought it was safe to come home. She'd been wrong. It wasn't even safe to pick up lunch. Natalie O'Ryan ran suddenly sweaty palms down the front of her crisp ankle pants and swallowed the lump that had settled at the base of her throat. The bell over the front door of Grady's Diner had barely finished its reckless cry when every head in the open room turned in her direction. She stared down the curious gazes, some in faces she'd known her whole life. They sported a few more sunspots, a handful of new wrinkles. Dark hair had turned gray and cheeks had hollowed with age. And every eye was sharp with assessment. That hadn't changed a bit. The tourists turned back to their fish and chips, clearly finding her unworthy of their distraction. But the locals, the women of the Ladies' Auxiliary and the men of the Lions Club next door, continued their open-mouthed gapes. She'd thought perhaps no one would recognize her. A foolish hope, maybe. But she'd carried it nonetheless. It had been in her pocket like the prayer stone Mama Kane had given her when she was 8. Whenever her heart had begun to pound on the long flight from Nashville to Toronto, she'd rubbed at that fantasy, her thumb wearing the skin on her index finger raw. Every time her breath caught in her throat as they soared over the island she'd called home for more than half her life, she'd hugged her neck pillow like it could conceal her from all of these knowing eyes. It hadn't worked. The flush-cheeked child inside her tugged on her arm, begging her to pull a 180 and disappear like she'd done all those years ago. But she shook her arm as though she could physically dislodge the urge to flee. She wasn't entirely successful at that, but she also wasn't the same child she'd been. Managing to plaster a smile into place, she marched across the tile floor, weaving between brown tabletops surrounded by matching chairs that looked like they'd been stolen from the church's basement. She grabbed for the lapels of her tailored jacket and tugged them together over her chest. The nosy glances followed her every step, but they hadn't turned into behind-the-hand whispers. Yet.
"Is that little Natalie O'Ryan?"
As if they'd all been waiting on the confirmation, tongue set off wagging, followed by stage whispers filling the air until even the children in booster seats craned their necks to get a look at North Rustico's very own prodigal daughter. Natalie licked suddenly dry lips and forced herself to search out the owner of the voice. She'd have known it anywhere. It was the last one she'd heard before leaving the island nearly 15 years ago.
"Hello, Mrs. Burke."
The matriarch was a fair bit older than Natalie's mom, even though her daughter, Bethany, had been a grade behind Natalie, in part because the Burkes hadn't had children until they were in their late 30s, but mostly because Natalie's mom had been barely 17 when she gave birth. Mrs. Burke nodded stiffly, an attempt at a smile elbowing its way across her face in fits and starts. It never reached the wrinkles at the corners of her eyes, but she tipped her head in greeting, showing off box-blonde hair and a style that hadn't changed in all the years Natalie had known her.
"This is quite a surprise."
Like she had as a 9-year-old, Natalie moved to shove her hands into her pockets and hunch her shoulders against the intrusive stares, but she stopped halfway there. She wasn't a child anymore. And her J.Crew pants didn't have pockets. Squaring her shoulders, she schooled her features into what she hoped was a very pleasant expression, which she bestowed on all three women at the table.
"It's good to see you again, Mrs. Burke."
It wasn't. But she'd learned to keep some things to herself.
"Natalie?
Natalie!"
At the call, she spun toward the counter, where she was nearly blinded by a smile that reached ear to ear.
"Aretha?"
The woman, Aretha Franklin, no relation to the singer, as she liked to remind folks, nodded as she scurried across the floor, unashamedly bumping into chairs. But her eyes never wavered, and they felt like a warm embrace, a missed embrace. Reaching out both hands, Aretha swept Natalie into her grip and squeezed like this might be the fulfillment of her life's dream. I didn't believe it when Marie said you'd be coming.
Natalie returned the gentle grasp, careful of the paper-thin skin and the simple diamond on her left ring finger. Ever since Russell had proposed with a rock that rivaled Gibraltar, she'd become especially aware of every other ring. But she couldn't ask about Aretha's rock, so she stumbled back to her last sentence.
Marie? At the red door.
Natalie's eyebrows bunched. Right, Marie and Seth, who owned the inn, the one that was new to her hometown. So were Marie and Seth, for that matter. But Russell hadn't known that, so he'd plowed forward, booking the inn for as many of their wedding guests as it would hold, and hiring Marie to help make the final arrangements for the wedding. A sharp pain in her chest sent her hand to her collarbone, and she tried to wipe away the discomfort. But there was no wiping out the truth. There were more than just final arrangements to make for the wedding. The dress, rings, guest list, groom, those were all she had lined up. Everything else, flowers, food, cake, decorations, and more, was going to have to fall into place in the next 6 weeks. The unchecked items on her mental to-do list flashed like the neon sign of a Nashville honky-tonk, and her head spun. The air thinned as though she'd hiked 15,000 feet, and a sudden rope around her chest rubbed her lungs raw. Aretha pressed a hand to her waist, the wrinkled fingers warm and softer than wedding dress satin.
Honey, are you all right?
Natalie forced a smiling mask across her features, one she'd donned 1,000 times. It was the collected concierge, the proficient professional. No matter the situation, she could handle it. Sneaking a subtle breath that did little to fill her lungs, she nodded quickly.
Yes, of course.
The wrinkles around Aretha's eyes crinkled, her gaze knowing, unbelieving. Some things never changed. Aretha had perfected that look long before the first time she used it on 7-year-old Natalie.
I came over to pick up lunch for Russell.
She flipped a hand over her shoulder in the direction of the inn. He's checking into our rooms. Eyes flashing with delight, Aretha followed the motion of her hand.
Of course, Adam's brother. We've all been so eager to meet him.
Right, because everyone here knew and loved her soon-to-be brother-in-law, despite the fact that she'd met him exactly 3 times, and that she downright disliked him. Well, that wasn't entirely true. He seemed a nice enough sort. Her grandma would have called him a good seed, hard-working and not predisposed to finding trouble. In their 3 years together, she'd never seen Russell as happy as he'd been when he introduced his little brother, his long-lost brother. He hadn't offered her the details, but she hadn't pressed for them. But there had been a rift between them until Adam showed up a year before. Adam had been pleasant and jovial. And he was dating one of her former schoolmates, Caden Holt. He was also the reason she was back on the island, which put him at the bottom of her list.
When Adam told us that Russ was going to have his wedding here and stay at the inn,
Aretha's eyes fluttered like a teenager in love.
Well, it was more than we'd dared to hope for.
Natalie leaned forward at the note of wistfulness in Aretha's voice. It tugged at her heartstrings, as though there was some deeper meaning to Adam's suggestion that they stay at Rose's Red Door Inn for their wedding, and Russell's acquiescence to island vows. Still, the ceremony could have been in a lovely country barn outside of Nashville. Several of the musicians Russell had worked with over the years had even offered their property. Middle Tennessee at its finest. Verdant green pastures, stunning wooden beams, colorful wildflowers. And no unpleasant memories. Yes, Nashville would have been better. But Russell had been so pleased when he told her he'd agreed to have their wedding in North Rustico. He thought it would make her happy. And rather than risk making a scene over his $40 steak, she'd opted to plaster a smile into place and get through the rest of their date. After that, he'd been too thrilled, too pleased with himself at doing such a thoughtful thing, for her to tell him she didn't want to go back to the island. For her to tell him there were more reasons for leaving than she'd hinted at early on in their relationship.
She rubbed at a sudden throbbing at her temple and squinted against the fluorescent reflection off the pale tile flooring. In her old stomping grounds, there would be no ignoring the childhood that had chased her off the island, across the border, and all the way to Music City. Suddenly, a ruffled shock of white hair appeared at Aretha's side. It belonged to a man with a map of wrinkles that would take a lifetime to navigate, but his eyes were kind, the easy line of his mouth hinting at a smile that was never far gone. Aretha grabbed his hand, her fingers sliding between his easily.
"This is my husband, Jack Sloan. Jack, this is Natalie O'Ryan."
Natalie's stomach gave a good bounce.
"Husband? You got married?"
3 years ago this October." Jack added his silent nod, his grin no less satisfied than his bride's.
"So the ring wasn't for show."
Natalie couldn't wrap her mind around the announcement, and she managed only a slow series of blinks. Her hands were more frantic, suddenly too big, fluttering about at her sides and searching for those non-existent pockets. Aretha had been alone since forever. Her antique store was off-limits to most of the area's teenagers, but her story was well-known. If Natalie's family had been the most popular topic for gossips in the Crick, North Rustico to outsiders, 25 years ago, then they'd only inherited the title from Aretha, whose husband had taken off for parts unknown before Natalie's dad took to the bottle and other women's bedrooms. Natalie cringed at the memories, the ones that seemed to trail her wherever she went. But Aretha and Jack didn't seem to notice. Their sly glances and the subtle brush of their elbows kept them both distracted by something infinitely sweeter than the bitterness rising at the back of her throat. After a long moment of silence, another voice interrupted them.
"Natalie O'Ryan, pick up."
The familiar face at the pickup window was topped with a white hat that looked like it hadn't been washed since she'd made her first trip to this counter. Some things never changed.
"We'll see you soon, honey," Aretha said.
Natalie turned to the counter and leaned her forearms along the smooth grain of the pine. A white sack with two matching styrofoam containers appeared at her elbow beside a matching bag as she looked under the overhang. Harrison Grady stared back at her with his one good eye, the patch on the other nearly as worn as his hat and apron. His brown gaze was almost too intent for just the one eye, and she shivered under its weight. When he finally spoke, his voice was filled with as much gravel as ever.
"I saw your name and said, it can't be our little Natalie, back from away."
She tried for a smile at the words she was sure were supposed to be endearing, but it refused to show up. If she'd really been their little Natalie, well, no one had loved her half as much as they loved talking about her parents. Except maybe the Canes, who owned the local dairy and invited her into their home for more meals than she could count. She'd spent a fair bit of the flight praying she wouldn't see them this summer, any of them.
"Harrison?"
She tipped her head in greeting.
"Still frying up the burgers, I see."
He crossed his meaty arms over a barrel chest and nodded.
"What else would I be doing?"
Because no one in this town ever did anything except what they were expected to do. Little boys grew up to be fishermen like their dads, and little girls married those little boys. But not Natalie. Her path was about 1,500 miles away, and she'd get back to it as soon as the wedding was over. Harrison sucked on his front tooth before adjusting his eye patch, and she couldn't keep her mind from straying to all the ways she'd imagined he'd lost his eye. No one seemed to know, but it hadn't stopped her and little Justin Kane from speculating.
"How long you in town?"
6 weeks and 4 days.
"That's awfully specific."
She snatched one of the white bags on the counter. "Just long enough for the wedding."
"Wedding? You're getting married?"
Apparently, Aretha hadn't blabbed about her plans to the whole town. Not that she'd ever been the one to pass tales over the back fence, but old suspicions died hard. When Natalie didn't respond to Harrison, he just kept the questions coming.
"Why didn't you say you were getting hitched? Who you marrying?"
He gave her a half smile.
"I just always figured you'd end up with Justin."
She nearly choked on her own tongue, the cough rattling her shoulders and beating up on her lungs. Justin. She hadn't heard his name in a while. Had almost hoped she wouldn't hear it again. At least not here on the island. Certainly not in relation to her pending nuptials. After all, he was the Cain she most wanted to avoid.
You've got his lunch there, anyway.
Her fingers suddenly forgot how to work, and she dropped Justin's lunch to the floor. The rustle of the bag and crack of styrofoam against linoleum pierced the room. Every head in the restaurant spun in her direction. Again. She cringed as she ducked to pick up the bag. If the sloshing bottom of the plastic was any indication, something had spilled, and would be all over her if she wasn't careful. Holding it out by the twin loops, she shot him an apologetic look.
I'm sorry. I'll pay for the replacement.
Harrison took the remains of the lunch and shook his head.
No problem, I've got it covered.
With a nod, he indicated a sack that had been closest to her elbow.
That's yours.
Flames licked at her neck, and she swiped a hand over them in a vain attempt to settle her nerves. Trying for a low chuckle, she settled for a too-high laugh as she snuck a peek at the diners. Most had returned to their meals, although there was still a tourist family staring a little too hard, a little too long. Squaring her shoulders, she turned a tight smile back to Harrison.
I insist.
His squint suggested that he remembered a time when she couldn't afford to buy one meal, let alone two. So she flashed two colorful twenties in his direction, which brought just the wide-eyed glimmer of recognition she'd been hoping for. Maybe you don't need to tell Justin that I ruined his lunch.
Who ruined my lunch?
The voice was deeper than she remembered, thick like honey over almonds. Like the years had taken something from him, too, but it couldn't steal the island lilt and the touch of humor she'd always known. Yet no amount of levity in his tone could keep his words from wrapping around her chest and squeezing until there wasn't enough fresh oxygen in the world to keep her breathing. With a shaky hand, she dropped the money on the counter and grabbed her lunch. No matter how long she stared at Harrison, his gaze never wavered from a spot over her shoulder. There would be no curling up and rolling out of the restaurant unnoticed. She hunched her shoulders just to make sure. The weight of the gaze on her back didn't shift. Nope, she was stuck, and she was going to have to face him. It had been a ridiculous dream that she could dodge him all summer in a town the size of a postage stamp. Even more so when she considered that anyone who remembered her would remember them. There hadn't been a Natalie without Justin, or a Justin without Natalie. Not until he'd stayed. Not until he'd let her leave, alone. Irritation burned in her stomach, and she tried to physically push it down. But no amount of smoothing her blouse was going to calm the tumult inside. No amount of anything could save her from this moment. Might as well get it over with. Squeezing her eyes closed, she turned as Justin let out an audible gasp. When she blinked, he was frozen, his jaw hanging slack, dark and foreboding like the whiskers on his chin.
Natalie?
There was a judgment in the single word, a condemnation that sounded like it tasted of not-yet-ripe raspberries. Maybe he was angry. Even if he had no reason to be. After all, he was the one who had changed their plans. He was the one who hadn't followed through. He was the one who'd left her alone. So he had no reason to be mad at her. The force of his steamed breathing grated on her, shredding her nerves and binding her up until her own breathing turned hard, furious. The rush of anger gave her the courage to meet his eyes. Blue. So blue they still put the sky to shame. If time had aged his voice, his face hadn't been dealt the same hand. His skin was as smooth and tan as ever, the 5 o'clock shadow darker, coarser now. And his black hair was longer, pulled back into a short ponytail. He'd asked his mom to cut it every other week when they were kids. The memory must have flickered across her face in the form of a smile, because he flinched at the same time, his glower turning fiercer.
Natalie?
He seemed to need to confirm her identity before lashing into her. And she had no doubt he would lay out all of his grievances. Only it wasn't her fault. He could be as mad as an unmilked dairy cow. It didn't change the facts of the past. But now, face to face with the past, she did the same thing she'd done 15 years ago. She ran. 2. Justin Kane slammed the back door hard enough to rattle the old toys in the farmhouse's attic. He followed that with stomping feet that sounded like they belonged to a fuming teenager rather than the man responsible for keeping the longest-running family-owned dairy in the county in the black. A cow step on your foot? His mother's voice carried from the kitchen to where he stared at the ceiling in the mudroom. It was a little too light, a little too nonchalant. She knew what was going on. He crossed his arms, fisted his hands, and held himself just on the brink of slamming his head against the wall. Of course, that would only amplify the thunder beating against his temples. No. He hadn't been stepped on. It just felt like that. I suppose you heard about Natalie, then? How long have you known? He nearly bit his tongue off. The traitor. He didn't want to know how long his mom had been keeping secrets from him. Especially not where Natalie Orion was concerned. But mostly he didn't want her name said in this house. Aretha told me she ran into Natalie at Grady's. He cringed before easing his fingernails out of his palms. But he didn't make a move toward the kitchen door, the white frame with four triangular windows open only far enough to allow a breeze and the sounds of home cooking through. And the smell of something sweet like cinnamon and sugar. Did you see her there? The question poked to life the image of Natalie's freckled face and the halo of red curls that swished around her shoulders. A flash of bitterness washed over him, overriding anything sweet coming from his mother's kitchen. So he answered her question with one of his own. How'd you know I was at Grady's? It's Wednesday, dear. Of course, because his life was completely predictable. Did you know she was coming back? Something slapped against the side of a plastic bowl, and her paws spoke volumes. Maybe she was a traitor. I'd heard a murmur. You mean a rumor? I wouldn't call it that. She might not, but the rest of the town would. Natalie most certainly would. At least, the Natalie he'd known so many years before. Crossing an ankle over his knee to untie his boot, he yanked on the lace until the bow morphed into an angry knot. His blunt, calloused fingertips fumbled against it, only managing to bumble it more. Hopping on one foot, he thudded a shoulder against the whitewashed board wall and bounced against the cement basin. Pain shot through his hip and up his side, and he groaned as he leaned against the work sink. You okay in there? His mom appeared at the open door, her face only just making the turn around the corner. Lowering his still-booted foot to the floor, he looked up at her. He must have looked more rotten than he felt, because her features immediately wilted like a dried-up tulip. Lips puckered and cheeks sunken, she shook her head and walked into the mudroom. Oh, hon. He held her off with a single raised hand. I'm fine, Mom. The words didn't even waver, and he took more than a little pleasure in salvaging his dignity, whatever was left of it anyway. She looked so pretty, her hair as red as Anne's ever was. His eyes snapped back to his mom's face, and the chagrined smile that played across her lips told him everything she hadn't said aloud. But it did little to heal the hole in his back where she had certainly stabbed him. When did you see her? She crossed her arms over her midsection, poking out one hip and cocking her head to the side. Not that it matters. Which roughly translated to, this matters most. I passed her on the road. I was driving over to Aretha's and she was walking toward Grady's. Sweat peppered his forehead, and he swiped at it with the back of his wrist, cursing any physical reaction he still had to Natalie. And you couldn't take a minute to warn me? Well? I didn't know exactly when you'd be there. You didn't guess that it would be the same time I always go to Grady's on Wednesdays, or the same time I always break for lunch. He bit off the last word, trying to stem the bitterness that sprang up with each syllable. It's not like Harrison sends me your schedule.
He snorted. I wouldn't put it past him.
Undoubtedly, the man had a knack for making his mom happy.
He'd rat me out faster than you could smile in his general direction.
A pink blush crept along her cheeks, but she rolled her eyes and pressed her hands to her hips. This isn't about Harrison Grady.
Right.
No. Wait. He wanted to snatch the word back as soon as it popped out because he knew exactly where his mom was headed, and he wanted to be as far from that path as possible. Too late. This is about Natalie. And you. Her eyes were as blue as the ones he saw in the mirror every morning.
No, it's not. There is no Natalie and me. There's only Natalie.
He waved his left hand at the edge of his wingspan.
Way over here. And this is me.
Reaching as far as he could with his right hand, he wiggled his fingers to draw his mom's attention.
See? No and about it. Our lives are so separate I haven't thought about her in a dozen years.
Now it was her turn to snort. It wasn't delicate or soft, exactly what he'd come to expect from a farmer's daughter turned farmer's wife turned farmer's widow. She didn't have time to hide her feelings or play a part that wasn't real. I think there's a lyric book under your bed that would prove that's a lie, she said. He scowled at her. This was why grown men shouldn't live with their moms. But he didn't have a comeback or half an argument to stand on. It was true. So he turned his attention back to his boots. Leaning his rear end against the wall, he grabbed the heel of his left foot with one hand and the toe with the other. Then he yanked.
Oof.
His boot didn't budge, but his ankle popped under the abuse, shooting fire up to his knee. Elbows still protruding and hands clamped on her waist, his mom stared at him, her gaze swallowing his pitiful position.
What did you say to her?
He shot her another glare through a lock of hair that had escaped the rubber band that usually kept it out of his face. Her face was expectant, eager. She was serious. His stomach plummeted into the stupid boot still on his feet. Brushing his hair behind his ear, he dropped his gaze and shook his head.
What's that mean? You didn't talk with her?
Another quick jerk of his head and he pinched the bridge of his nose between two fingers.
Did you not see her?
No, of course you saw her. But you didn't go up to her. You didn't get a chance to. You only saw her from a distance. The tone of her words danced upward, as though she could speak the story into reality. Any other scenario seemed impossible.
No, I saw her, face to face.
Like it was on a hinge, her mouth dropped open. It was enough. He knew the question she couldn't ask.
What happened?
He'd been asking himself the same thing for the last 4 hours. What had happened? He'd seen her hair from behind, but he'd sworn it was only his eyes playing tricks on him. Clearly, the summer sun had left an orange glow around everything he saw. The woman in front of him in line didn't have a head of waves so lusciously red and topped with a golden halo. It was his worn-out memories that had made him imagine Natalie. That butted him in the gut like a protective mama cow and forced out his breath. The minute he'd walked into Grady's, he'd started telling himself it wasn't her. He told himself he was imagining her back in town like he'd done 1,000 times over the years. But every time he tore his gaze away, it fought its way back. He stared at his hands, but then suddenly found himself counting the ripples from the crown of her head to her shoulders. When he tried to look around the dining room, he found Stella Burke and followed her gaze straight back to the woman talking with Harrison at the counter.
Maybe you don't need to tell Justin that I ruined his lunch, she said. He would have known her voice anywhere, and it turned his insides to soggy toast. Still, something in him begged for the torture of confirmation, and he'd asked for it.
Who ruined my lunch?
Pinching his eyes closed now didn't stop her face from flashing through his mind. Stricken, shocked, furious. Before he could even identify it,
Every emotion that had torn through him swept in her eyes first, as if he was always a step behind. Like that time they'd had to learn to dance in sixth grade. No matter...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?